AutoLine After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, passion for excellence.
This is AutoLine After Hours with John McElroy, episode 72 for September 23, 2010.
Help! I've fallen and I can't get up!
Watch AutoLine After Hours live at AutoLineDetroit.tv every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time or 2300 hours GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for AutoLine After Hours in the iTunes Store.
And of course, joining me as always is that bodacious auto extremist, Peter DeLorenzo.
John, good evening.
The man is in the building. And also we've got Chrissy Thompson from the Detroit Free Press joining us today, and it's great having you here, Chrissy.
Thanks so much for having me.
And our special guest is Chris Pruce, the president of OnStar, and great having you here too, Chris.
A pleasure always.
We're going to be talking about a lot of OnStar stuff, but first we got to get into some of the interesting news that came out this week. And what do you guys make of these idiots at Chrysler who work at the Jefferson North plant that the local Fox News television sent out a crew to, because they got a tip from people in the plant that these guys were going out on their lunch break, hitting the store, buying all this beer, going to a park, drinking, getting high, and then going back to work. And Peter, I mean, this is the company that just got saved by the government. This is the plant where they work, where the president, President Obama, went and sang the praises of the American auto worker. And then these boneheads go out and do this stuff.
Well, as my readers know, I've been particularly harsh in the UAW over the years, but these are not emblematic of most of the people.
No, most of the people are pretty good. We have to point that out.
It's too bad.
In fact, we shouldn't even say most of the people. We should say this is a fraction of a small percent.
And it's too bad because it's the kind of publicity they don't need. This smacks of old Detroit, Lordstown, all the bad
blue collar blues,
and all the bad stories, and it's just unfortunate. You know, I can't say anything much more than that.
Any comments, Chrissy?
I mean, I think, and Chris would probably agree. You just think PR nightmare. You know, the company can do everything it can to work towards, you know, a positive message or improving things, and then you have something like this. But
pretty hard for Bob King to spin this one.
Well, my disappointment in the union was to say, oh, we're very much against people doing this on the job, and, you know, we want to work to make sure this doesn't happen and safety and blah, blah, blah. I wish they had come out and said, we're going to hang these guys. We're going to tar and feather and hang them and chop them into pieces, and they should be fired immediately.
Yeah.
Because to me, the union's shooting itself in the foot by not coming out and coming down hard on this, because Bob King's come out and said, we're going to go out and organize the transplants. We're really going to grow the membership in this union and blah, blah, blah. Well, hey, buddy, you better go tell these transplant people that you're solidly behind making sure this never, ever happens.
Yeah,
I just didn't think they came out nearly strong enough. But I sure hope, you know, this doesn't happen more, because 2 years ago, when everything was really cratering in this town, I had this woman call me just out of the blue, worked at the Cadillac engine plant here down the road, which is now closed. And she was in tears as she called me, and she said, you know, we never said anything about the bad workers. We'd always see people come in, and they'd be getting high, getting drunk, slacking off, and we would just do our job, and we never said anything. And now we're all going to lose our jobs. Mm-hmm. And we should have stood up and said something about it. I guess the good news is Fox 2 learned about this from people in the plant.
To say, it sounds to me like somebody probably tipped them off. And if the UAW does it right, they can spin this in terms of using it to get a better focus on the things going right.
But their initial,
send the message.
Yeah, but their initial announcement was, like John said, totally weak and
right. Yeah. It's unfortunate.
Yeah.
Unfortunate, right. But that's the reality of it. On a brighter note, I thought one of the cool things that broke this week was designer Joel Piskowski landing at Ford. He's now going to head up all exterior design for the Americas for Ford. As we've talked about, too, I think Ford needs better exterior styling.
Well, it's a big move for Joel, and it's a big move for Ford. I mean, he's a talented guy. He's has an almost impeccable track record, done some fabulous work for Hyundai. He did great work at GM. He had, like, a man who wasn't there stint at Mercedes in California.
We still got to find out what the hell happened with that
job. Must
not
have been a good fit. He, you know, I mean, the design aspect of this business is my most favorite aspect of it. It's ultra creative. You have creative personalities, mercurial temperaments, the whole bit. And it's fascinating. And Joel is very good. But it's like when I was in the ad biz, if you had a creative department and the chemistry was wrong, oh, boy, it got ugly.
Right.
So something like that happened at Mercedes.
That's
but it's a good, it's a strong move for for Ford. And, you know, it's great for Joel.
Well, you know, because all the good stuff that Hyundai has right now, good-looking stuff, has pretty much been done by him. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, we all knew that when Mercedes dumped him that he had to land somewhere, and he had to land somewhere good. And, I mean, a fairly high-level position. He's just got too much talent. Mm-hmm. And while I like the passenger cars coming out of Europe from Ford right now, I'm not sold on their passenger cars being done here in North America. Truck stuff, not too bad, but...
Which ones?
Out of Europe?
No, which ones don't you like?
I'm not sold on the Taurus. Like the way it drives, but it's there's very thick sections, a high belt line. It's got a chunky look
this
to it.
This is a challenge, though, of redoing existing architectures versus clean sheeting, is that the hard points on the car drive the design, and design... That it's a big issue because the designers are sort of limited into what they can and cannot do based on.
Yeah, and Ford's problem really is you've set the tone with the Fiesta, but I'll tell you what, that Focus is a sensational car, and all of a sudden that's going to be the face of Ford, and the Taurus is not going to fit
right
as a passenger car. Fusion, you know, not so, the disparity is not so much with the Fusion. But once that Focus hits, Ford's going to have to redo all their stuff because it's just such a statement that they need to be right there with everything.
That's what I was going to ask, is if you see him continuing to move in that direction with the, I can't remember the term now, but the design where the car is supposed to look like it's moving while it's standing still with those deep creases on the side.
Oh, like he did at Hyundai?
With the Focus.
Oh.
Looking that way. I mean, is this a shift, or is this...
Yeah, I think it's a shift, and I think Maury Callum, who Joel's going to work for, I think they're going to do more of that. And you bring up a good point. If they do more of that, and once the Focus hits, the Taurus is going to look like it doesn't fit with the rest of the
line. You know, it's funny, because I was at an event today where they had Tauruses and Explorers parked side by side. And, I mean, there's an incredible amount of similarity in styling, design cues between those two vehicles. Mm-hmm. But they also had a Fiesta there, and it was like, whoa, this doesn't fit in at all. And maybe that doesn't matter on one level. Good design is good design, and it's not like everything has to have a family resemblance. But I think for a brand, it helps when it does. You know, so BMW's always got the kidney grills. You know, Mercedes has always got that three-pointed star. There's always something that brings it all together. But, yeah, I think...
It'll be interesting to see how he handles the form vocabulary and how they translate, because I think Peter's right. If it's everything's coming out of Europe and then you have somebody designing for the Americas and that is going to be passenger car-based, what becomes the face of the company? And what becomes the design thesis that is going to permeate, and you change everything over, and just given the time it takes architectures to go over, tough ticket.
Well, you know, that's why you have a VP of design, but Ford's got a very strange arrangement in that its VP, Jay Mays, works out of London. I mean, he doesn't work out of Cologne, where all the other design work is done at Ford of Europe, and obviously he's not working out of Dearborn, so Jay's the one that's got to bring this all together, and so far it hasn't happened. Now, I understand, you know, it takes a long time to do things in this industry. We're 3 years into the one Ford program that they've got. So I'm willing to give it a bit more. But the design staff arrangement at Ford is unlike any in the industry, i.e., with the big boss, not at any of the major studios. And I've never understood why they've tried to do it that way. What else? Hey, another thing that we got to talk about is this Chinese plan to force all automakers to turn over all their electric vehicle intellectual property to their Chinese partners if you want to sell EVs in China.
I've kind of been worrying about this on the site for a while, but, you know, at any given moment, this whole Chinese love fest could blow up in all the global automakers' faces, and it could get ugly. I mean, what they're asking for, if I'm a car company, okay, they've got you over the barrel. It's just like, look at our market. Look where your profits are. If you're not playing here, you're going to...
Hey, don't just translate that from the auto industry perspective. I mean, when over a barrel is with China and the U.S., you can expand that to the entire economic system.
So if you're a manufacturer and you say, you know what, I'm not, you know, no. They're not going to give you your technology or go along nicely. Yes, we have our partner in China, and all of a sudden the government goes, ding, ding, ding. Okay, thanks very much. You know, good to see you. Thanks for the memories. Now get out.
Could happen. It was interesting, too, that the day after China made that announcement, Carlos Ghosn came out and said, hey, you can have all our stuff. There's no limit to what we will bring to our Chinese partners. And then the day after that, which is today, I guess, all the Nissan other executives are backpedaling furiously, going, whoa, 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 whoa. You know, we're not exactly sure what Ghosn meant by saying unlimited and all that kind of
stuff. This is just the beginning of this kind of stuff. Congress is involved, John Dingell's antenna is up, and
is this just China's way of saying, hey, you think you can pressure us to raise the value of our currency? Hey, we'll throw this out here. You're not going to participate in our EV market unless you give us everything.
Well, let's just say it's not going anywhere good. My gut feeling is it's not going anywhere good the way China's going.
Well, go ahead, Chrissy.
This didn't really come as a surprise to me, though, from the whole perspective of the way the joint ventures have to be set up over there. I mean, they've already had quite a bit of leverage.
Yeah, you know, I think the electric thing goes a little further, though.
Okay.
I do, too. And because this isn't just saying, okay, you have to sign up with a partner. This is saying you have to sign up with a partner and you have to give them all your technology. And that's where... I can't believe the Chinese are that crazy. I just can't. I think this is some sort of negotiating tactic on a much larger level. So it's like, okay, we'll pull off the EV mandate, but here's what you're going to give in return.
It's complicated.
I was going to say, we should ask Chris how these things are really set up.
Well, we have a Chinese joint venture, and the issue of IP is always front and center, and... There's a lot of political issue embedded in this. I don't think your read is entirely wrong. I think we got to be realistic that the more we, you know, China's a player, that's not going to change. China will get IP one way or the other. So the question is, how do we do it in a way that is mutually beneficial to both economies and continue to foster better trade relationships? As tough as it can be, I mean, they're also very realistic. And my experience with the Chinese in our joint venture has been very interesting, but I would say net positive. They're very shrewd business people. They're very aggressive. But they're also not unrealistic. So there is a fair amount of that posturing and positioning that goes on. But the reality is there is a cost to doing business in China. And I think, you know, at the government level as well as at private industry. And I think that train's left the station. The question now is, how do you manage going forward in a way that's not going to run the train off the tracks?
Damn, Chris, you still got it, man.
Well, I did have several years in PR.
Yeah.
For our viewers, listeners should understand that Chris is a highly decorated PR veteran, and that was as smooth as it gets.
But here's the counterpart to that. Japan and China are really starting to have issues now. And so there's this territorial dispute, right? There's this fishing vessel.
Going on for decades, centuries, right?
You could say. But now it's really coming to a head.
Yeah, I just think, you know, the more money, the more prosperity China gets, the bigger the saber.
Well, you know, now
more rattling that's going to go on.
Japan's accusing China of having shut it off from all these rare earth metals, which is exactly what you need to make electric cars and hybrids and all that sort of thing, and a bunch of other stuff. And, you know, they're suing Toyota Finance, alleging that they were bribing dealers. Toyota saying, no, we were giving them incentives to sign up with Toyota Finance. Earlier this year, the strikes that took place at all the car companies only took place at Japanese ones. So it's like that's the counterpart to what I see of what you're saying, Chris. I hope this country, the United States and China, work out a good trade relationship. But to Peter's point, the wealthier they get, I mean, these guys, they're going for number one, and they will achieve it. There's no question in my mind they will achieve it. I think there's going to be some major hiccups along the way, though.
It's complicated.
Yeah. What about this electric cruise? You know, GM's put all this money into the Volt, and now all of a sudden we've heard they've got an electric version of the Cruise coming out. Peter, is this like insurance policy?
Well, Chris knows everything about that, I'm sure. But, you know, they've got a lot invested in the Cruise, and it would make sense to try to adapt the platform if they can to, you know, spread this technology out. You know, it's not unusual that they would think of doing that. But we do know that if it's started off as an electric or extended range electric vehicle, the architecture is a little different. You can save weight and do all kinds of things. So I don't know if it's hedging as bad. I just think GM's trying to make the most out of that platform. They've got a lot invested in that platform.
Here's my read. Okay, you got the Volt, great car. Smart technology or smart approach, I think, having an extended range EV. Who knows where the market's going to go? So you got a car that'll work just fine, even if you don't recharge the battery. But here's Nissan coming along with a pure electric car at a substantially lower price point than the Volt. And I got to believe GM is going, hey, wait a minute, we better. What if the market does go pure EV and
We said all along, going back to the beginning of the Volt, I mean, range extension was a function of battery cost and energy density on the vehicle, and that if you could back out batteries and increase density and back out engine power, you would eventually, if we got to a pure BEV at some point, all the better. But at the point of launch, range anxiety, lack of infrastructure, these things were mitigating. Cruise is a regional play. It's specific to that market. There's a lot of reasons within that market and government framework that made sense for GM DAT. And so they've done that. But I think, you know, Peter's, I think, right in that it's, you know, we've made a huge investment in lithium-based technology. Everybody has forgotten $5 a gallon gas.
In this country.
But let's face it, we're at $80 a barrel in a depression-level auto market. And we don't have the emerging markets booming like we did. So I think it would be unwise and unrealistic to not have all of your bets covered in the electric space. And I think from a GM perspective, we feel pretty good about that right now.
Mm-hmm. What else is on the list here? Oh, one more GM item we've got to talk about is the IPO. The government's saying it's got to be 133. We'll get no comments out of Chris now.
Chris can't acknowledge. Yeah,
no, I can hear you. Can they sell these shares at $133?
I mean, there's talk of share splitting, right? And so they've said that they're going to have, I believe, 500 million shares right now as their total, equity is divided that way. And so they split the shares, you know, four ways, more shares, they're cheaper, doesn't scare people off as much. Will they be able to recoup it? I mean, who knows, right? But I think the government will probably start out at maybe less than what people had originally expected with how many shares they're going to put out there so that they can wait for the share value to go up.
Yeah, no, Bloomberg already came out just this evening saying that they're not going to issue as many shares, which I read as trying to get that price up as much as they can. $133 a share just sounds pricey to me. And I know it's all based on how many shares are out there, you know, because Ford's got a kajazillion more shares in the market, and that's why its stock price is down around 12 or 13.
Right, and the family stuff with Ford, I'm not the Ford reporter, I don't understand that all, but that complicates things significantly too, so.
Right, but I don't know, when I saw the $133 a share number of what the government needs to recoup all its money, it was like, whoa, that's maybe they're not going to get it all back.
I mean, a Morningstar analyst valued the company last week at $133 a share. So.
Oh, really?
Well, yeah. I mean.
I hope I'm wrong. I really do.
I'm not saying that I necessarily think it's going to be right that like that at the beginning, and I'm sure that this analyst would also agree with me. But I mean, some people think the government's going to get all their money back. It just depends on how much they put out at the beginning. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is a good time to start just boring in on OnStar here. So, Chris, tell us, what's this thing going to do? And I ask because when OnStar came out, it was bleeding-edge technology. I mean, guys were so far out in front of anybody there. And now it's kind of stayed where it was, and now there's a whole bunch more competition out there. And I'm just sort of reiterating this for the audience. I'm not teaching you anything new here on that. But, you know, Ford Sync is the hottest thing out there right now. People are literally going to buy cars just because they've got Sync in. And just as some others are catching up to Sync, now, bang, they've got this My Ford Touch or My Lincoln Touch. And how do you respond to all the competition that's coming at you?
Well, I mean, first off, you made a great point that we started this space. I was looking in getting the new job about 6-7 months ago, I was actually watching the old Batman commercials. There's actually a Batman commercial where he's getting his emails read to him. I mean, we were doing this stuff before anybody even was using email like they are today. And OnStar started out kind of as an all-in kind of thing, but then the business and, frankly, just the business environment within GM, OnStar, you know, started doing other OEMs, got isolated, found its value proposition around safety and security. That's what people would pay $200 to $300 a month for, depending on the package, and they refined that model. And the more OnStar and GM sort of drifted apart, the more the schisms between engineering and marketing sort of grew into place. And you know, the business developed where the money was. It was a very rational thing. It was optimized for cost of the delivery, maximize ARPU or the revenue per user, and drive down costs, drive up users and revenue, and eventually, somewhere about 7 years into it, the business went positive, and then it went very positive. So there was a lot of reasons that you stayed on that business plan. I think what happened, you know, with the world changing was, you know, we grew up with a cellular market. We grew up with an embedded telematic device. That's the difference. You know, Sync is a completely different animal. It's basically trying to get better use of your iPhone or smartphone and iPod and your media. And creating an environment where it's very easy to bring your media with you and play it in the car. And nothing to do with what OnStar does. Then they started playing with 911 Assist and some other things to try to ebb into that space. And I guess you could argue we're now ebbing back the other direction. But, you know, we're at a point now where OnStar's got tremendous unaided brand recognition. I mean, 60-70%. It's up there with some of the biggest marks. If you just walked up to somebody on the street and asked them, do you know what OnStar is, they'd give you a fairly cogent answer. If you do the OnStar bug, it's like a 90% unaided.
The blue button.
So it's got this tremendous value. So when we said, let's go, you know, we got to get back into the game on infotainment, we were fairly agnostic about whether that was an OnStar-led thing or was it a GM, you know, infotainment thing that we went and did something else with. But you know, people already thought we were there, and we just weren't doing it as well as we could be. So we said, well, we're not going to beat them. Let's join them. So they changed leadership. That's when I came in, and they basically said, go solve this issue of the engineers fighting and the marketing guys not talking and create a vision for it, you know, recommunicate the brand and create a strategy. So we've done that. That's what we've been working on over the last 7 months, and that's kind of what we started talking about last week with the relaunch.
Talk about what you talked about last week with the relaunch. What kind of new technologies, especially, are you bringing in?
Well, if you looked at the challenge, let's just say, you know, Sync has redefined the category, and I would argue, to their credit, it's as much a feat of marketing as it is technology, because in terms of jobs done in the car, there's not much you can't do in a GM product plugging in your iPhone to an USB port than you can getting it through stereo Bluetooth in a Sync system. I know the Ford guys are hitting the ceiling now, but it's true. You guys know it is. And so, you know, you needed to go in and figure out how do you create this great image. along with the great technology. So we looked at what can we do in the OnStar IT backend now and deliver through the OnStar HMI or the OnStar box in the vehicle. Then we looked at what do we need to do to get the hardware and the user interface on the infotainment in the game, and then how do we create a long-term strategy that's going to build an advantage around an embedded telematic device? Because the one thing 14 years of doing something gives you, you get iterative learnings that mean we would shock people if they knew how inexpensively we can do the OnStar electronics and run the system. It's just been optimized so thoroughly, and how good the IT is.
So but you're talking about the hardware in the car then.
The hardware in the car. And
because you still have a lot of back office, as
back
it were. That's a big
IT,
expense, right?
It is. And it's, you know, again, you know, we are a premium gold-plated safety and security device advisor-based. And there's a reason you do that. 911 assist type systems, you know, there's intersections where you could have three PSAPs or three 911 systems jurisdiction to one area. Your cell phone doesn't throw you to the right PSAP. It's an automated line, assuming that it's tethered to your system and it got a read and the Bluetooth didn't fail and the phone stayed with the car. Having the advisors, 14 years of that database, we do that better than anybody, and it costs money. That's why we have a subscription-based service. Because we have that embedded telematic device, because I have all this IT, I can complete other jobs for the customer, quite elegantly, by the way, and I can offer that with non-subscriber-based services. So what we did telegraph last week is one that we would, we've retooled the brand. We've completely redone the IT backend. We've got new hardware for O11 and the OnStar box, which does a lot of better things navigation and safety-wise in the core portfolio. And we're going to deploy a lot of services that we can do in the cloud and deliver to the car through the OnStar network device. And then we also telegraphed that we're going to go into non-subscriber-based services. So that IT backend, coupled with your phone or your smartphone, tethered to a system in the car, gives you an ecosystem, if you will, of services and abilities that the other guys can't match because I've got two connections instead of one. And so as we talk about the apps in the vehicle, how you develop the operating architecture in the car and how you develop hardware is going to be built around that. So we haven't said much about the way out there stuff, but we did talk about what we've done with the IT services and what we've done with the current hardware. And it's good stuff.
You also talked about, I think, expanding into Brazil. Isn't that one of the next markets you're looking at?
One of the big issues was to go, you know, Ed Whitaker laid down a couple imperatives. One was, you know, we quizzed him on, you know, what do you want to do with this business? Do you want us to go build OnStar to sell OnStar, or do you want to use OnStar to sell more GM products? Important question to answer because I would go, you know, there were other OEMs in the door talking to us at the time. At the bankruptcy, there was actually a pretty serious discussion about selling OnStar. Mm-hmm. We were throwing all the furniture off the boat, and there were some pretty interested buyers, and talks got pretty far down the road, and so other OEMs were in the house at that time. The decision was made, no, we need to use OnStar now to sell more GM products until we get the competitive shakeout in this infotainment space settles. I would argue most of this stuff's going to be commodity in the car. You're just going to have it. It's not going to be a big differentiator, so we're probably a couple of years from that, so let's do that. Second thing was let's get it global. Can we use OnStar to help sell more vehicles, more Chevys in Brazil, more Opels in Germany or whatnot? So we've now gone out and we launched in China December last year, and it's growing like crazy there. And now we're looking at Brazil. We're looking in Europe. We're looking in Australia, the other major GM markets, because all this hardware we're developing now is going to be globally based. All the OnStar stuff so far had been CDMA-based cell phone technology in an HMI specific for North America. The future hardware now goes on the global architecture.
Can you scale up, though, without your costs going along in the sense that you've got to have all these advisors and they're going to have to be specific to those countries to be able to speak the language and know things like slang or whatever it happens to be, idioms. They've got to be able to understand who's ever pushed the button. So do your costs scale up along with you trying to go into other markets?
Well, there's two ways to look at that. One is you bring a voice rec, and our system is voice rec-based with an advisor. So clearly, the technology is getting to the point where a lot of those jobs that the advisor in the non-emergency area could be accomplished through excellent voice rec engines, and we're pretty much getting to that point. So that's one big chunk at the cost. We don't want to run, and we will not run safety without advisors. We don't think it's right. I would say, again, I think it's, even if you look at the disclaimer language around the 911 sort of e-call systems, there's so much disclaimer about what the system is not that it's almost, you don't know why you're buying it. So when we go into other markets, we have to look at it two ways. We can either forklift out all the IT capabilities that make the telematics work. Think about the phone apps. Think about the CRM. Actually, the most exciting thing at OnStar right now is all the CRM benefits we're getting through linking dealers and customers and all the onboard diagnostic information and data probing and things you can do to give a customer just a really unique experience. We could forklift that into other global markets and help them run it. Or where there's a more mature market with growth, you can do an advisor-based. In Brazil, it's all about stolen vehicles. They have regulations for blocking and tracking. Nobody wants to invest in that and not offer other services. So there's a way to amortize that business. Europe, you know, we're, you know, obviously in a pretty challenging situation there with Opel, and they don't have a lot of power to price. Still having to think a little bit harder about how to get into Europe. Australia, mature market, they have hold and assist thing there. We can get in there. So, and we'll take it as they come. But I think that we can, you know, our expertise in the telematics on behalf of GM will make that stuff work all over the world.
Mm-hmm. What about other automakers? Weren't you on Acura at one point?
I think we had VW, Subaru, Honda, Acura, Toyota, Lexus.
Right.
Most of that ended when the analog system went down. And we were going to have a complete redo of the hardware. And everybody saw telematics as becoming more of a competitive issue. I don't think there was a lot of comfort from those other OEMs to stick it out with GM, or they were, you know, the OnStar guys would not innovate at the same pace for them that they would for GM. So Rick Wagner made the decision we're going to keep it specific to GM. Like I said, towards bankruptcy, that kind of changed, and we kind of telegraphed to some people, don't worry about this whole GM link thing, we're going to solve for that. And now we've swung back. So I suppose if we threw the door open and said we wanted to do other OEMs, they'd probably, you know, flip us the middle finger because we've been so on and off again. They wouldn't want to do it. But I could see maybe down the road where we got in there. There's, interestingly, other business growth opportunities for OnStar because we are seen as a somewhat ubiquitous safety and security brand. And telematics, with the advent of 4G and LTE, if you listen to some experts, there's going to be a network access device and everything from your toaster to your car to... what we do better than anybody in the world, actually, is our IT makes that information swim, and it's very difficult. And so we have a potential to go into other business, to other telematic verticals where safety and security would play.
When you say it's difficult, you mean it's difficult for anybody else to follow in your footsteps?
It takes a lot of – the shame of the whole discussion around Sync, and I actually had journalists telling me, the Ford guys actually spend more time talking down OnStar than they do talking about Sync, which is unfortunate, which is why we did the big tech backgrounder. Because if you get behind what runs that system, there's a guy named Dick Lynch with Verizon. He's kind of like the Bob Lutz of the telecom industry. He's the one who envisioned and designed the LTE system that's going to be deployed for Verizon. They'll tell you the telematic backbone to OnStar is probably one of the most capable and sophisticated M2M telematic machines in the world. And we are so so embedded in how to run within that type of a network. You know, we know things going wrong in the Verizon network before they do usually, because our service is so active. So, and we have advisors and people call when they don't like something or it's not working. So I think that capability. You can use the IT to talk to any device. It's just acquiring data. So once you create APIs that can be handed out to other device makers, and you have a value proposition within your brand that is credible, you have the potential to get into other businesses. And that's a more opportunity for GM to market to new customers through OnStar.
When you say get into other businesses, you're not talking to other car companies. You're talking other industries altogether, right?
I'm talking that you can define it two ways. Is OnStar a automotive cloud delivery telematic platform? Yes. But honestly, it's really a machine cloud platform. I don't believe the car is. I think, in fact, a lot of the debate about this infotainment thing, a lot of people think the car is going to be some sort of a unique platform, and it's not. The reality is you don't want to be broken from your information anywhere you are. And so the car is just another device from which you connect to the network and to the cloud. And so getting multiple devices to grab multiple points of information, create a way to aggregate and analyze that data and make it useful to a consumer and then send it back to the machine, that takes a lot of doing. And that's something we've been doing a long time.
Well, shouldn't my smartphone have a blue button on it too then?
For instance. I've had people come to me and say, I've had young women who will say, I go to the club at 5 a.m, I'd feel embarrassed to call 911 for no reason. But I would love to be able to call OnStar and they could take the lat long off my phone and I would know I was safe. Would you do something like that? and tied to their account in our new phone app that you can control the car and unlock and flash the horns and get mapping directions to your car. One of those features is you can just hit the advisor. Advisor gets your phone read, gets the read off the car, and will tell you, your car's 200 yards to the right. We just flashed the horns and light, run. Or do you want help? That's value to people.
Because just as you say, people don't want to have their car disconnected from the rest of their information. No. Who wants to have this great system that they park in their driveway or their garage every night?
Right.
You want to take it in the house with you or wherever you're going.
Exactly. And I think the other thing you got to look at is how does the telematic industry develop? And the thing where it's going now, where we are kind of tethered to sort of one billing and voice-based model that is eventually just going to be sunset. You're going to have six devices. You're going to choose how many devices you're going to put on the AT&T or the Verizon network, and you're going to determine how many gigabytes of information you use, and they're going to charge you for that, and it won't matter again whether it's a cell phone or a car or a bicycle or an ATV or a boat. It's going to just charge you for your data that you use.
So, Chris, you got this job 6 months ago.
Yeah.
Tell us how you got from being head of GMPR to being able to do this whole thing and talk for hours and hours more about it in 6 months, and how OnStar came from being none of this to all of this in 6 months. How did that happen?
Well, it's a complicated story, one of many fast. No. I got into this job because I've loved and been part of technology. I've been a techie. I built my own computers growing up. I've had every device. And if you look at what's happened, I mean, this is, again, I give Ed credit in terms of how he thought about stuff, is that technology is driving communications. Communications, the fulcrum, all the social media interactions, it's becoming the fulcrum of all business. I could tell you things that I've seen in businesses that have come to us. When you see what's coming, the world is going to get mighty interesting very fast, and it's absolutely mind-blowing what's happening. But this idea of everybody being connected, social tools, social media, making it all happen is huge. That was what drives our communications. If you look how we handled the bankruptcy or you looked at the things we invested in, we were out there on a lot of good things to sort of control and handle a very impossible situation from a PR standpoint. And so, I knew that space. Also, I think, I'd made it clear to Ed and others, I thought I could do more than just, be in communications, and thought wanted a shot at running something a little bit bigger and having P&L responsibility. And I'll just say the one thing, whether you hate GM or love GM or you don't believe it's changed, I can just guarantee you 1,000% no functional leader like a PR guy would ever end up in a P&L center in the General Motors business operating unit in the old regime. No way. Not only would it not be considered, it would be ridiculed and burnt in effigy for even being brought up.
Well, that's true of every car company. No other PR vice president would have ended up in a position with full P&L like you have.
Well,
it's never happened.
Is
not
that a
function
of how scary things were with OnStar? I mean, you talk about all these businesses that you guys have talked to with all this mm-hmm. stuff coming out that's going to blow our minds eventually. Were those people talking to OnStar before you showed up?
Some were, and some of just are a function of what's happening in the world, and not all of them. We got to stay focused on what is going to drive revenue for the business, and we got to solve for the GM competitive issues. What happens after that 24 to 36 month window with OnStar is really going to be up to the board of directors and to the leadership as to how they want to develop it. All these talks and things that were going on, people have been coming to OnStar for years, and there was a, and again, I don't want to make comment on what I don't know as far as what the rationale was at the time, but the word I got when I arrived was basically, if you can find something we haven't thought of or been approached on, of a service, a business extension, or an activity, a guy named Nick Pudar who does our business development, if you can find one that we haven't thought of and said no to, I'll give you my next paycheck. And I went out on Twitter. I got over 1,000. I just said my first week on the job, what would you do with OnStar? I got 1,000 responses from different people inside and outside the company. Those, I said, really comb this stuff. And you could kind of bucket them into a couple pretty broad categories. And with some few exceptions of some odd twists on things, almost everything had been considered before at some level. But again, it's very rational. Again, what drove revenue and what the task was at the time, I can't talk about the financials of OnStar. To say it's a successful, profitable business, I think, is an understatement. It was, even being in the company for a lot of years and being around it, I was thoroughly surprised with how absolutely expertly profitable it is, and they've eaten.
See, I'm surprised to hear that because GM has never broken out OnStar's earnings.
Nope.
The analyst community has always said, well, it's clear they're not breaking it out because it's not making money, because if it was making money, they'd be bragging about it in the annual report.
Like, because if I told people, it would be, but I mean, what we have said is it's very easy to start getting a handle on the revenues. You know, we charge somewhere between $200 to $300 per subscriber. You're getting up near...
Wait, go back to that. It's not $200 to $300 a month.
No, a year.
I think earlier in the show you said a month.
I'm sorry, it's $200 to $300 a month. I misspoke. I wish it was...
We're going to
get it to
$200 to $300 a year.
$200 to $300 a year.
Yeah. If I got that done, yeah, that'd be good. So you figure you've got an average monthly revenue per user somewhere in, you know, $22 to $25, give or take, and you got 6 million people buying your stuff, so you can get a pretty quick read on the... With revenues from subscriptions, and we sell, you know, tens of millions of dollars in hands-free calling and other services, and then we have other revenue streams. We consolidate the XM revenues.
If it is that profitable, why has the company never broken out what the earnings are, or will it soon?
Because I don't know. They could choose to do it. I think there is some specific language to the OnStar business at a high level in the IPO activities. At some level, they'll talk about that, but. I don't know. It's just competitive issues. You know, you don't need to give up what you don't need to give up, so don't. But it is a very good business, and we'll continue to develop that business. And I do think a reoccurring revenue model is still relevant, and I think it will be relevant for some time to come if you're giving people what they want. And safety and security will sell. We know that.
See, my perception is OnStar. This is my perception, right or wrong. OnStar appeals to old people. It seems to me that your advertising is aimed at old people, and that's why...
Not anymore.
It's the old... It's the blue button for help, I've fallen and I can't get up. Yeah. And, you know, I would think that if you're able to start saying, look how profitable we are, you could start creating some sort of jazz around the brand image.
I think, you know, there's definitely a demographic that appeals more to the product. I think the marketing has been hyper-tuned around... You know, the real stories, you know, somebody's in a bad spot, you got the real caller, they're highly effective. You know, but what I got on the advertising was I get these letters like, you know, dear OnStar, you know, I heard your ad and I will tell you it's one of the most effective ads I've ever heard, but I'm arriving at work in tears every day and I'm mightily depressed after I hear them. Can you please stop?
I hate them.
Yeah.
I can't stand them.
And so we did try to come up with a way, could we... not trivialize the nobility of what we do, but come up with something a bit more optimistic on the first hand, and then secondly, expand a little bit the value proposition of what it offers now that the world has changed and people do not perceive the capabilities of the system. So there's a lot of relevance to the current campaign, which is Live On, but it's the blue button OnStar. It's Live On, it's Talk On, it's Drive On, it's Travel On, it's Whatever On. And that's for a reason. As we expand into more services and we are able to do more things with the system, that marketing platform is going to be very useful to us. And Always On is the ACN or the crash positioning. And it's going to have a high relevance because that's the revenue, but we will continue to stretch the brand.
Good. I think it's that part of the show. Yeah, we got to turn to rapid fire. Ben, let's bring it up. Yeah, we'll get a little graphic here, so we'll want to keep it going. Al from Lake Orion says, why didn't you continue to provide the OnStar trailer hitch cover for marketing purposes? I had two of them stolen. I could never get another one. I agree. OnStar is very recognizable, and the blue button's right at the top. With all the trucks and SUVs GM makes with trailer towing, the hitch cover made great sense to me.
Sounds great to me. It predates me, but it makes sense. If I can solve somebody's problems with a hitch cover, I'll call the swag guys and see what we can come up with.
Dr. Botox wants to know, is there a difference in OnStar acceptance after the free period based on gender? Do more women sign up or men?
More women.
Which vehicle has the best take rate?
It varies. The higher you go in price and the higher the feature content of the vehicle, the higher the conversion rate. So just think of the line escalation. You start with the small cars through pickups. Specialty hot vehicles, Camaros, Corvettes tend to retain fairly low. And then it just goes up from there through GMC, Buicks, and up into Cadillacs. Cadillacs retain at almost 75%, 70%.
You'd think they got the money to pay for it.
Yep.
The men versus women thing, is it a big difference?
It's a fairly big difference. It's harder to break out because you have to look at it as households, but it is not atypical that you might have a husband or a father getting it for the wife's car because she's driving the kids to school, but he doesn't think he needs it. So sometimes we have a lot of 2GM households that only have one OnStar activated account. It's usually on the woman's car.
Jack Beckman wants to know, why is it impossible to upgrade OnStar? My G8 in 2008 did not come with Bluetooth. The 2009 and a half did. Yeah. Some people could get newer modules by getting them from Rex, plugging them in, and they were upgraded. But GM will not sell me one. Why?
That vehicle architecture was not compatible with the upgrades. Obviously out of the Holden stable, and that was some brute engineering to get that particular car done. But, you know, the Bluetooth phenomenon, that's part of the bad old days of, you know, we blanked out Bluetooth because somebody wanted to sell more OnStar hand-free calling minutes, and it wasn't exactly a cogent call.
But you're still not going to be able to upgrade, right? A spokesman told me that with the new module that will have these future capabilities, they can't upgrade in their
existing car. No, there's certain limitations to each iteration of hardware because it's not just a matter of upgrading the box. It's the electrical architecture and how you can move information within the car itself.
That's so those people have to get new cars.
Yeah.
Michael Shipley asked, do you think Ford design is set for the next few years and Joel was brought in mainly to update Lincoln?
No, they're already well down the road on Lincoln.
There's seven new Lincolns coming in the next couple of years, right?
Yeah.
So those are done.
Yeah. Well, almost done, but they'll put Joel to good use, I'm sure.
I'm sure they will. Leonard Fedorek wants to know, will GM offer the electric Cruise for USA manufacture and sale to compete with the Nissan Leaf and Ford Focus? I'd say no, not now. No electric Cruise here.
It's not the plan, but I wouldn't assume that we're out of the BEV game.
BEV means battery electric vehicles.
Right. Thank you for bringing that up. Jason Jadosh wants to know, just wanted to hear your comments on the seemingly endless trim levels by today's car companies. Case in point, Ford Edge Sport. We reported on that today. He goes, paddle shifters for soccer moms at $37,000. He says, am I way off here in my confusion?
No.
No, that's right.
Every time the manufacturers say, well, we're streamlining everything,
Yeah, they brag about how they reduce complexity, and then as soon as they see a chance to add something here and charge more money, bang, they go for it.
I don't assume you weren't reducing complexity by putting that paddle shifter in.
Yeah.
Because what you mean is so many people might go for those paddle shifters that no big deal.
Right.
It's almost for free in a way, in the sense that it might be more expensive to delete it.
That's the way to price for things. It's complicated.
Moral of today, my word.
NW Driver wants to know, will OnStar get a new joint marketing with Verizon again, and will they allow OnStar lines to be able to add to family plans again?
You know, yeah.
What he's referencing is
that if you had the OnStar, if you had a Verizon family plan and you bought an OnStar equipped car, you could basically just activate the hands-free calling feature on your family plan, just pay a nominal fee to activate another line, and you could use your minutes in the car. Verizon cut that off. Actually, that was one of the first questions I asked coming in. I can't comment specifically on that feature. I will tell you that we are working with Verizon on some better marketing alignments to help customers out and doing some interesting things with the in-car calling feature, so stay tuned.
Okay. We'll get to the calls. We got a bunch of calls coming in, too. Jerry Hightower of Georgetown, Texas. By the way, I love it when you people tell us where you're from. We love knowing that we're getting calls from all over the country and the world. We get a lot of Canadian.
Hightower. It sounds like somewhere Ed would live, right?
It does. Anyway, he says, will Mazda build their own, quote-unquote, new Ranger-type pickup? I doubt it. Ford and Mazda just seem to be going their separate ways. I guess I'd be surprised to learn if Mazda's getting this new global Ford Ranger platform. I can't see them doing it.
No way they're getting that.
Okay, Ben, let's bring in a question from one of the phone callers.
Yeah, this is Rick in San Diego. This is for Chris. Not sure you remember me from last August GM's tech event, but I would like to thank you for taking time to listen to my ideas and giving me some feedback.
Great.
I enjoyed talking with you, and you gave me the impression that you would make some positive changes at GM. I do like the new ad for OnStar. It's more upbeat, informative, and I think it makes someone want to know more about the OnStar.
Good.
Thanks again for giving OnStar some more features and apps, and the upbeat message is great. Looks like OnStar's future is going to be going in a better, much more profitable direction. Thanks again for your time.
That wasn't a plan. Thank you very much, I swear.
No, Rick calls in from San Diego every now and then.
Your check's in the mail, Rick.
Yeah. Let's bring in another there, Ben.
Hey, this is Derek V from Plainfield, Illinois, calling back again. I tried to let it go, but it just wouldn't go away. This whole lightning bolt design on the Odyssey, I appreciate the feedback last week. It was good notes. But I tell you what, you know, my kids sitting in the third row of my Sienna, I don't hear them ever saying, "Hey, Daddy, I'd like a better view of the sidewalk. Hey, Daddy, I'd like a better view of that guy's tire. Hey, Daddy, did you see that construction zone? I can't see that construction cone because this car is in the way." I mean, kids don't look down. That's what I love about kids. They're always looking up. You know, I want a window going over the top of the roof line like the previous Land Rovers did. You remember that back window, how it rolled over the top? My kids are looking for airplanes and blimps and helicopters and big, tall skyscrapers. They're not looking down at the ground. You know, and when you really look at it, does that little lightning bolt really make that much of a difference? You know, I don't know. Maybe it does, but we won't know until we get to see the car, and I know my wife is the type of person who, if the car doesn't look good, she's never going to consider it. So we would never be in a Honda lot now. But on a positive note, they always got motorcycles and engines to fall back on. Anyway, thanks a lot, guys. Good show. Always love it. And take care. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Thanks for the comment there. And while you were talking there, too, what I was envisioning, remember the old Oldsmobile station wagons, the Vista Cruiser
with the windows up
in the roof?
Those are very cool.
Those were great. That's awesome. When wagons were hip.
Yeah. All right. Ben, let's bring in another.
Hi, this is Jeff Eischek from Albany, New York. I was just wondering if you all got any more insight as to why GM has decided to expand the Opel brand outside of Europe. This was recently announced, or substantially expand, that is. From the outside, their global branding strategy still seems somewhat confusing to me, you know, especially compared to, you know, the one Ford. Thanks. Love to hear your feedback.
Chris just returned from Europe not that long ago.
I start getting the ticks from my time dealing with the Opel situation in Europe. I love the people there. It's a great experience.
But the caller makes a great point. I mean, General Motors has told the world that our brand going forward is going to be Chevrolet, and now they're saying, and now we're going to do more with Opel, too. And
I got to be careful because I'm off my playing field substantially here and don't want to get a tough call from Nick Riley in the morning. But I think the easy answer is that, you know, one of the big stress points with the Works Council and with the situation in Rüsselsheim was that Opel needed to be able to grow beyond Germany, that secular growth in Germany for Opel was basically capped and was likely to decline, and that if they were going to make the structural cost pencil there, you have to be able to send more cars.
One thing I just saw, I got to look more into it. Opel's going to start building Ford cars. I just saw something. Was it from Bloomberg today?
Really?
Well, you know, the Ford Ka is currently made by Fiat.
Right, right.
In the same plant where they make the 500.
They certainly have
in
excess
Poland.
Capacity there. So. Yeah. Didn't hear
right.
that.
So I don't know if Fiat's.
There was
cooking.
A Bloomberg story about Opel, but I don't remember seeing Ka's. I don't know if I read the whole thing, though.
Yeah, well, that's because I was out partying with those Chrysler workers. Ben, let's bring in another one.
Hey, man. This is Youngblood calling from Cleveland, Ohio. I was just on your website, and I saw these assholes drinking and smoking pot from Chrysler Corporation. This is a very bad indicator, and it's just they're not the way the union people work. I'm a retired operating engineer, and we have a lot more pride than that. We have safeguards in the operating engineers that protect against stuff like this. If we're even suspected of drinking or any kind of drug violation, they have a right to pull us off a job, and immediately we have to take a drug test. If we refuse, we're out. No ifs, ands, or buts. They have, if you fail, you go through the program, and they give you a one strike. But other than that, you have to comply. This is totally wrong. I resent what they're doing as a professional in the union operating engineers. This is just a rotten apple in a bunch of good apples that the average union personnel works hard. He's very conscientious. He won't do anything like these assholes did, and I think they should be fired. Have a good day. Have a good evening.
Live on.
Yeah, thanks. Youngblood writes me fairly frequently, but yeah, we covered that at the beginning.
Well, he's totally right. And yeah. You know, the whole country's angry about this. And again, as we talked about earlier, the good news in it was their fellow workers who turned them in. And I don't think the rest of the rank and file is going to stand for this anymore.
And it's not emblematic of the rank and file at all. It's an aberration.
Stephen Dargell says, the thing I hate about OnStar, I bet you get a bunch of those, is it adds nothing to the resale value of a car. Wouldn't it be nice to have some free feature in all OnStar-equipped cars?
Well, if you buy an OnStar car used, you can get 3 months free when you buy the car on the trial and get reactivated.
If it's certified used, what do you buy?
No, any car.
Oh,
if
really?
Anybody wants
any
to get
used one?
Any used car, you hit
how
the
do you activate
blue button.
That?
You hit the blue button and call and say, how do I do this? I'll tell you, we've been around so long, there's millions of second-owner vehicles now in the park. We're actually...
You got to tell that.
We're making hundreds of millions of dollars right now remarketing OnStar cars to second owners, and in fact are going to start launching some very specific programs with some of the big box used car retailers and some of the big dealer networks and with certified used.
I did not know that.
Chris, yeah. You got to get that word out. People would buy a car just knowing that they could
they
get
do,
three
and
months.
They get the 3 months free. And so on the variable cost hit that we take, that is a difficult proposition because that's part of the problem of not socializing your feature value or talking about what the product brings at a financial level. I do think there's some piece of ALG consideration and Blue Book consideration for OnStar, but you know, that's part of the challenge. We've got to increase the value proposition of the brand. It's got to do more. It's got to be seen as more important. That's going to drive the different rating agencies and others who track used cars to get more out of it. Yeah, we get it. It's a long road. You gotta plow through them one at a time.
George from Brooklyn wants to know, what does Peter think of the recent Cadillac ads and their tagline, the new standard of the world?
I said you're welcome to General Motors because I remember...
reviving the old tagline.
Well, Joe Alwanek, you know, told me, so we read your stuff and we're going with it. Well, I love the new ad.
Speaking, that's not good for your consultancy.
I love the new ad of the CTS-V at the Nürburgring that Jeff Swartz.
I like that ad a lot.
My buddy Jeff Swartz shot.
And, oh, really? Oh, yeah. I didn't know
that one
Jeff
is so different that. From. They tried to make that claim with the world's fastest production sedan in May, but now they're showing it.
Well, that's because they got the right guy shooting it, and they. Their energy.
Well, the soundtrack and the back being the engine. It's got all the visceral qualities. It connects the target.
Jeff has probably spent more time at that track as a director cameraman than anybody. So.
And laying down some laps himself.
Yeah, yeah. And so it shows. So it's good. I like the new tagline. I endorse it when I said to bring it back. I think, you know, put your stake in the ground. Yeah, a lot of people aren't going to believe you, but you have to. Aim high and...
Hey, I was there when we reconstructed Art and Science in Cali. That's where I came into GM back in 98. It's just a long, slogging, hard road. But if you compare everybody, we live it incrementally here. We kind of live with it. Where you look at where the health of that brand is now, the credibility of the vehicles in light of where we started 10 years ago,
yeah, it's
it
an
is
incredible,
absolutely phenomenal story.
Yeah,
and it doesn't
story.
Get told enough. And I will tell you, the cars are really good, and I think the ads do catch up finally with the promise of the vehicles and the new stuff that's coming. I think it's going to make that pay off even more.
I just had a CTS coupe for a week. It was a great car. Loved it.
Nothing stops. I mean, that's so visually resting on the road. I mean, unbelievable.
Another GM ad I saw recently I liked a lot was Buick LaCrosse, where they were talking about how you can be listening to live radio, stop it, rewind it,
pause. That's a good one. That gets my ire up, though, again. But here we are in the environment of infotainment, the car. We're not connecting in the OnStar stuff. And this is where Joel Dwanek and I have been. Basically, I had sort of a Jerry Maguire moment with the marketing guys after we launched our campaign last week and said, you know, the clear expectation of our leadership is we are going to out-muscle the other guys on getting this across. We need a coherent message on that stuff. Because I agree, Buick's done a great job with feature placement in their ads, but we got to tie that up to a bigger proposition around MyLink and OnStar as we go forward.
Well, I understand what you're saying, because you can get that feature on in other brands.
Absolutely.
You can get it in Chevy.
I'm telling you right now, if you get into my new SRX sitting out there, even against the Ford MyTouch, I got about 90% of that game covered. I mean, there's scant few things you can't get now. Nobody knows it. No, that's the challenge. GM's challenge marketing-wise is we have had too much to talk about. You know, Ford got in there. They created Team Detroit. They devised a brilliant strategy of, hey, it's innovation. Drive One's the payoff. They split innovation into two very clear buckets. One was going to be this infotainment thing called Sync. The other one was the hybrids and the fuel economy, all as a function of quality.
EcoBoost.
And then they just drilled it. I watched 14 ads. I counted them, 14 Ford ads during college football last weekend. Not one of them didn't at least mention Sync. They're razor sharp. If that's the payoff for the customer, they're doing it in spades. There's a reason they're winning.
Ben, let's bring in another.
Hi, Jim Campbell calling from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Great guest
Jim
tonight.
Campbell from Chevy.
Question for him with regards to OnStar. I mean, it's, I guess, probably a little bit unfortunate. I think they got caught when the analog and cell phone status changed to the digital. I know a lot of people who had the OnStar lost the service of that product. And I guess the other thing is, how much longer do you think it's going to be before this type of technology is going to be utilized in vehicles to, for example, I know you can monitor your gas, fuel, a lot of things on your iPhones and those kinds of things, but before they'll start using it for accident investigation and also probably warranty claims and whether or not a vehicle was abused. Do you see that stuff coming down the road with this type of technology?
Yeah, we're doing the crash stuff now.
I guess the other thing is how fast it's changing. Anyway, great show. Talk to you later. Thanks.
Thanks, Jim.
Yeah, the crash stuff we do now. In fact, we just one of the big things that got buried last week is we've just put $600,000 or more research into with the U of M and CDC on collecting crash data and analyzing and creating emergency room payoffs, you know, analyzing and making predictive analysis of what a person might incur in a crash based on that data. On the warranty side, we probe. We have 1,600 sensor reads in the vehicle at any one time, and we can aggregate that information. So from a warranty avoidance, connecting the dealer with service events for the customer when they choose for the dealer to have it, just to give you a sense of how brilliant this is, we're getting a 30% lift on service retention in our dealers when our OVD customers agree to let the dealer have the data. We fight claw tooth and nail for a 0.2 percentage points of service retention. We're getting 30% in one fell swoop. I'll predict one thing we will do with OnStar, it will become the benchmark CRM tool in the industry. That is what there is tremendous just now scratching the surface CRM value in this embedded telematic. We got a lot to do there. Oh, very exciting.
Very
great for customers. We're going to be able to do customer experience things. They're going to be really unique through that telematic device.
Ben, we've got some more.
Hey, John. This is John in Atlanta. My question concerns Alan Mulally. For all the talk about how great a CEO he's been and probably will be, isn't it, in your opinion, possible that somebody like Donald Peterson is an example of how Detroit can homebrew a great chairman and chief executive officer? Look forward to your...
Obviously, voiceover.
Actually, Donald Peterson came from Seattle, which is where Alan Mulally worked. In fact, I've wondered if that's how Ford even found out about Alan Mulally, because Don Peterson, who was president of Ford, he was pushed out, though. Guy I thought fairly highly of as an executive, but he was definitely pushed out of the company. But he was also on the board of Boeing. And I'd just like to know the background story. Did Don Peterson, you know, call Bill Ford and say, hey, there's this guy named Mullally you ought to check out as long as you're searching for a CEO. I'd love to know the background on that. Ben, we got two more, it looks like, and we'll wrap it up after that.
All right, this is Peter Craig from El Mirage, Arizona. And just wanted you guys' input on all the new entry vehicles with all the options and everything and leather seats being introduced into the General Motors lineup and also Ford. With the price increases, the way the economy is, I'm trying to see how people can really afford these entry-level vehicles. Just want you guys' thoughts. Thank you.
Well, that's the, you know, I've been talking about this for a couple of years. Car prices are going to do nothing but go up, and that's what's happened. You know, we've lived through a decade and a half of dirt cheap credit, and we had this push model in Detroit where the three companies got themselves in such a legacy cost bind that they just had to blow cars out
the
door.
To wick up the plants. Throughput's the only way to stay
ahead. Just keep going, and that's over. It's done. It's gone. Mm-hmm. And so right now today, and this is a shocking statistic, the average MSRP right now is about $33,000, $34,000. The average transaction price, average, the average car today costs $29,000 to $30,000. Yep. And in 5 years, my prediction's always been by 2015, it's going to be $35,000 for the average car. And, you know, to the caller's question, you know how to make small cars profitably? Charge a lot more money for them. And that's exactly what's happening. I just got done test driving a Ford Fiesta, which has a base price of, what, 14 and change or 15. This one was $19,300.
Yeah, and Ford said that their Fiesta transaction prices are, you know, way up. But, you know, you get double-clutch automatic, you get leather, and
that's going to be the ticket, though. You can carry that same car in Europe's probably carrying substantially more MSRP in transaction price. And if we continue to North American source these vehicles, which is the plan, prices can only go up because there's not going to be any other way to cover the fixed cost, and we can't go back to the days of subsidizing the rest of the lineup.
And to your point, you know, Chris, I mean, in this country, essentially, full-size pickups and SUVs, which carry whopping big profit margins, mm-hmm. have essentially subsidized passenger cars from the Detroit 3. Mm-hmm. And as that market shrinks, that is, the full-size SUVs and pickups, because CAFE alone, corporate average fuel economy regulations, is going to shorten that or shrink that market, there's not going to be that subsidization.
You know, everybody's kind of falling back on the CAFE thing, and that's understandable. But when you look at what's in that 2017 to 2020 window and what happens to the mix, you can't, there is no way to even begin to achieve or think of achieving those levels unless you begin now radically shifting the mix of vehicles you sell to accrue the credits, and that is exactly by the design of the program. So that's going to be a function of price as well. There's going to be more value to those cars being sold.
We got one more call, and this will be it.
Hi, this is Jim from Sioux Falls. I have a question for Chris. At what point do added features to OnStar or any other manufacturer's products get to the point where it's distracted driving and you just have too many things going on in the car other than paying attention to the driving experience? Thanks, bye.
Great question, Jim. I'm amazed we haven't talked about distracted driving yet.
You know, I've said it 100 times in interviews over the last week. The big red blinking light on all this is going to be the government, not because they're, I think, being unreasonable. It's just there's going to be some point where some kid's going to be surfing on his Chrome browser on his 8-inch touchscreen, talking to his girlfriend on Bluetooth, and he's going to run to the back of a minivan and kill three kids, and that's going to be the end of it. And I think we're already two points. One is it's interesting that everybody just sort of woke up one day and found out, because people are carrying around smartphones, that driving a car was a complicated and difficult task that requires a lot of attention. So there's been distracted driving forever, okay? And the safety rates show that we're way coming down. We're winning in safety. Devices can be used in the car. Technology can focus the driver and not distract the driver. But the caller is right. There is a point at which you just got to say enough. And I will tell you, You know, we've already gamed this to a certain degree, and there's going to probably be a point where we're going to competitively just suffer the consequences and say, we don't believe in this. Our Facebook app was an attempt to solve for this, because anybody addicted to social media, you see how people use their devices, hitting a button and doing an audio file works. We've got data that proves it, so we did it. But I agree with the call. I mean, I really wonder at what point are you so encompassed with so many features, and not even can I operate them with voice or like that's going to be magic. It's just there's too many things you could be doing in the car. I think it's an issue. We got to watch it. This is going to be big.
And we just had a horrible wreck last week on 94.
I-94, very suspicious set of circumstances that they're looking at.
Well, you know, they had two teenage and a little older than that boys, and they were followed by a car with girls, and they suspect they were texting. And there was a stalled semi in the middle lane.
Right into them.
If you don't live around here, 94 is like a super speedway, you know.
My roadway to work and back every day.
Yeah, and they were in a few-year-old Focus and drove right in the back.
Right smack into it, yeah.
They both killed instantly.
Right.
Yeah, that's really good.
Yeah, very tragic. But I'm with you, Chris. I think that there's a lot that you can do in a car. As long as, I think I heard you say, eyes on the road, hands on the wheel, and mind on the task.
Right. And again, I think that's even with, you know, everything that we're doing with our text-to-voice engine could be expanded radically to POIs and reading emails and... We're just not going to go there, at least not anytime soon, because I don't see how you can jive that with our safe driving principles. I think what's going to be key for the industry is just to keep together on this, because I think what's going to if you get into where this becomes such a competitive race that it's going to end up in a bad place from a regulatory standpoint. And we already see propensity for some of the manufacturers to break. We have voluntary standards with NHTSA. We all agreed to. Some are not following them.
Well, eventually, if we have these pod cars and all these electronic guides, yeah, it'll be fine if you've got a 37-inch
LED. The enemy's platooning down the road.
Yeah, you have a 37-inch LED screen in your pod, whatever. By then, it's all over. By then, John and I will be long gone on the roads at night.
That's right.
Away from the grid.
That's right.
I want to ask you, though, Chris, the things that Mickey Bly, who's sort of your counterpart in engineering, has said are coming in the next year with, I have my little cheat sheet here with...
did he say the next year?
He did. Yes, I'm sorry. I checked the tape. Pandora and Stitcher and Grace Note and Wi-Fi, those things are safe? That's not to the threshold of too much distraction?
Pandora is just another way to get music. Stitcher is another way to get information. So I think those are very, very valid. Facebook, Twitter, like I said, we're doing a Facebook app now. I can execute that. We studied the calling button in the car for 3 years over millions of miles. And we could see, was there an airbag event in proximity to the push of that button? I could probably the best statistical analysis of this issue you could have. Surprisingly, not only was the test group not showing any anomaly for airbag deployment or crash while in a call or having activated the button, they were actually slightly safer. People don't believe me when I say it, but that's just the hard
cold. What you're saying is people push the button, obviously engage with OnStar, and they don't get in an accident.
It asks you, do you want to make a call? Dial friend. They dial friend, and they talk to friend, and then I monitor that call, and I look in the proximity of that line being open. Did I have an airbag event? Trigger. Did I get a sensor read? Because we're triggered. If we have an event and you're on a call goes, and it redials to the center. By the way, we will answer a emergency call 99.7% of the time within 1 second of hitting our screen with
wow.
The advisor. So anyway, so yeah, it's a safe, that type of stuff I think works. Yeah, but I'm more worried about, you're seeing video conferencing, cameras in the car, browser-based applications, HTML5 browser-based applications in the cloud. It's just a matter of how much information can people have to sort through to get to what they want. I mean, I brought this up with Apple. We met with Apple, and I said, aren't you worried about this? And they're like, well, why would we be worried? I'm like, because you sell devices that hold your iPhone on a dashboard and people can push it, and there's big lawyers out there. Well, of course we don't worry. We designed it to be looked at. That's what it's supposed to be done. That's your problem that they're driving the car.
Yeah. That's a pretty head-in-the-sand attitude.
Okay, so, but the point is that the UI, the user interface on a smartphone is meant to be played with. It's meant to be engaged visually. If you take that into the user interface of the car, that's an issue. So having 15 apps in a walled garden environment and a user interface in the car, I don't know. Got to study that one.
Yeah, well, all it'll take is one big class action lawsuit to get Apple to change its mind on that kind of attitude.
I've said it before. This will be the biggest social imperative for the industry to solve for since Cafe.
Wow.
Cafe's pretty big, though, so.
We're going to have a lot on our plate. We are still solving for it. And again, this is Cafe will be interesting.
Chrissy, did you have more to ask on your cheat sheet there, or did you get to them all?
Well, let's see here.
I acknowledge none of this information.
Yeah,
I have no idea what you did to Mickey Bly to get him to up all this information on our feed.
To be fair, this was an event that I attended after Chris's event, and Mickey Bly gave a lot of the stuff to us. But
engineers can't keep anything down.
I can't help it. So Pandora again, Stitcher, Gracenote, Wi-Fi, all in the next year.
Yeah.
And then other things that we haven't mentioned, testing going on notifications on getting a flat tire.
Yeah. That's a great feature, by the way. It sounds so simple, but to find out your tire went flat before you're leaving the house to go someplace and you just found it, we will text you as soon as it goes flat.
Which that is enabled by the module in the car because you have your phone with you.
Actually, it goes out to the OnStar link, though.
So exactly.
Yeah, the embedded
that's
link.
That's saying.
Right. Because you have a perpetual embedded connection to the car, you can't do that if no phone's in there.
Sure.
So we can.
Sure. And Chris also mentioned discussions ongoing with Twitter, although we don't have a date for that. Voice activated access to your map based navigation system.
Doing that now, actually. So.
MP3 players, next couple of years on voice activated. Access to
we
that.
Didn't
so that
talk
would...
about the Swedish masseur who will do your feet while you wait at a stoplight.
Really, just the blue button?
We've always said that is, you got to get to the good stuff.
But and then this concept of geoboxing, which
that's
would allow OnStar to alert you if you enter an area that has an amber alert or.
Geoboxing basically means you can define an area within a mapping device. And the car can know that it's moving into that defined area. And once the car knows it's in that area, we can send information to you. So think about you're 3 miles from the traffic backup. You don't have, a nav with mapping. You're not watching your Google phone. We can alert you to the fact you're moving into it. And we can also know exactly what's happening because you have 6 million vehicles out there. They can all act as traffic probes. We can anonymously just ping the system in a geoboxed area and say, how is traffic moving at the second, not after the helicopter flew by or somebody phoned something in.
And you could have Rod Serling's voice come over.
That's right.
You have entered a dimension.
Geoboxing's big. That's a big, most of the services for geoboxing will announce later, but the capabilities.
I was going to wrap it up, but I just got a note here. There's a last minute call for Chris. Ben, let's bring it in.
Better not be Dan Ackerson. Trouble.
Hi, John. My name is Tom Taylor. I live in Columbia, Tennessee. My question is about the OnStar, why the insurance companies don't recognize that and give discounts for your auto insurance if they're able to retrieve stolen vehicles, stop vehicles from running, and the like. Could we find out if there's going to ever be some kind of a discount from insurance companies if they recognize OnStar as being a money saver to them?
Yes.
Thank you, John. I appreciate it.
Yes, there is. And what we're doing actually is we're working on affinity-level discounts. We know OnStar drivers, if you're subscribed, you have a lower risk profile. High-risk drivers like teens and other things, if you could put an agreement with the parent and the teen to have tracking, the risk profile goes down dramatically. Like, I'm going to have a 16-year-old hit my insurance policy here in Michigan. It's going to double. I have no choice. He's in the house. So we're working with the insurance companies on rate-based insurance, mileage-based. My view of this is it's your car, it's your data. If you want to use that data to make a better deal with your insurance company, we'll facilitate that link. That was off the table in the previous OnStar administration. It's on the table now, so we're going to facilitate that discussion with the insurance company.
Hell, you could probably get it so that your insurance discount pays for the service.
It would. If you take the case of a 16-year-old joining, based on the actuarial data and how we can tool that, actually, you would make money on it.
So is that coming, or you're just in discussions?
We're in discussions, but we'll get there. And there's a lot more to talk about in that space in the future of our fine brand.
Well, we'll have to have you back then to talk about it. But Chris Pruse, thanks so much for
thanks
coming
for
on
me,
with
guys.
Us.
It's yeah, it's great. I've dreamt of being on this program. I feel like I've arrived for real.
That's great. Chrissy, thanks so much for coming on with us, too.
Oh,
this has been good having you.
Been fun.
Peter, always good to have you here, man. And, always.
And next week, are you telling the kids something?
Yeah, I am telling the kids that I'm not going to be here next week. I'm going to be at the Paris Auto Show. So Peter will be running the show. And I'm going to try to Skype in time, maybe not live for the show, maybe a little bit before then, and bring you up to speed with what I'm up to.
And cool. And then maybe I'll talk about my next book, which is going to the printer in a couple of weeks.
Oh, wow. Can you say anything now, or do you want to save it?
I can tell you the title.
Tell us.
You have to look it
up.
Has
he read the audience?
I have to find it. I'm sorry. I have to get
You're
it.
Sarah Palin.
I have to get it right.
I'll need cheat sheets sometimes.
That's right.
Okay,
Blithering Idiots, Chrome-Plated Pitchforks, and An Industry Under Siege, essays on the implosion and resurrection of the U.S. auto industry and the political train wreck that went with it.
All right.
So I had to read it.
Yeah. You want to get that right. That's good.
We just finalized it today, so
wow.
I had to read it.
I love that title.
And who's the publisher?
It'll be Inkwater Press.
Well, good. Remember, everybody, you can friend us at facebook.com/AutolineDetroit. Follow us at twitter.com/Autoline. Read Peter's rants at autoextremist.com. Follow him at twitter.com/Autoextremist. Chrissy, I'm sure everybody can find your stuff at freep.com.
That's right. All that stuff about what Mickey announced is there.
Yeah. So if you want to read the details, go to freep.com, F-R-E-E-P. And what? OnStar.com.
Well, actually, at C. Pruse OnStar for Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter.
Oh, cool.
At C. Pruse OnStar.
That's great. And then OnStar.com is
that? OnStar.com for everything else.
For everything else.
But the good stuff.
Spell your name for people.
Yeah, P as in Paul, R-E-U-S-S, Preuss. So if I ever ascend to the throne, they'll just have to cut a P off and keep the office placards in place. But we're not getting too aspirational yet.
That's good. Well, thanks, everybody. Visit our website, AutolineDetroit.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern, get your daily automotive news fix with Autoline Daily, and in-depth analysis and interviews with Autoline Detroit. That's all there, and much more, at AutolineDetroit.tv.
Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, passion for excellence. Change of frequency.